92 seconds. Roughly 1.5 minutes. Less than the time it takes to heat a cup of water for tea or make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Every 92 seconds, some American somewhere is sexually assaulted. That statistic comes from the Rape and Incest National Network. It's about 30 people per hour, 39 people per hour. Every 9 minutes, the victim is a child. Meanwhile, only about 5 out of every 1,000 perpetrators will go to prison. Do the arithmetic, come up with a percentage. It's not encouraging. April's a month for raising awareness and taking action on both child abuse and sexual assault. We've had the blue pinwheels out in front of the church and other places around town. But RAIN also sponsors a sexual assault awareness recognition in April as well. I want to talk about very specifically the spiritual harm done by both and the crucial role that communities of faith such as ours play in providing a place that can help survivors heal. I'll draw most of my examples from sexual abuse and assault because that's the area I know best, but what I say applies to both. Anytime a child is sexually assaulted, it's child abuse. Anytime an adult experiences unwanted sexual contact, that's abuse as well. These are some of the stories of the survivors, courtesy of RAIN, the Rape and Incest National Network. The survivors' stories that I will bring to your attention briefly have all chosen to disclose publicly. They are fellow members with me of RAIN's Speakers Bureau. In the U.S., 1 in 3 women and 1 in 6 men experiences some kind of contact sexual violence in their lifetime. That figure comes from the National Sexual Violence Resource Center. And I'm using the term in this very broad way to include any and all unwanted, non-consensual sexual contact. Adam. Okay. Adam had always enjoyed spending time with his uncle and would often look forward to sleepovers when they had extended time together. But on one of these occasions, when he was 14, their normal activities turned abusive. He was confused by his uncle's actions. Nothing like this had happened before. It's not like he wore a sign saying, "I'm a sexual predator," Adam said. Abuse issues can be particularly challenging for men and boys who face unique challenges due to social norms about masculinity. Adam recalls questioning his own sexuality after the assaults. Many male survivors experience this uncertainty and doubt. Adam did not report the assault or tell anyone. It was only years later that he finally opened up to his girlfriend, who encouraged him to talk to his parents. It was a long road for Adam to recover from the abuse, but he found that talking about what happened in a supportive network of friends and family helped him to heal. It was the 6th week of Lucy's freshman year, and she was dancing at a college party. She eventually went back to the dorm room of an athlete. "I remember knowing in my head, somehow, But you had to scream no or yell stop at least 3 times. And because I didn't do that, I thought, well, I can't say this is sexual assault. Having been raised a sports fan, I heard plenty of stories about where athletes at the peak of their careers were being accused of rape, and then I saw the victims trashed in the press. I didn't want that to be me. Society told me this wasn't a big deal and it was my fault. That's how I felt then. Nonetheless, Lucy says, that part of you that wants to heal is stronger than the part of you that's broken. I thought because he was my boyfriend, I was at fault, said Barbara McLean of her experience in sexual violence as a teen. I looked up. There was another boy standing there too. They took turns holding me down while the other raped me. This pattern of multiple perpetrator violence continued over the next year. Barbara was humiliated, but she didn't tell anyone what happened right away. It can be challenging for teens who are new to dating to recognize that sexual assault and abuse may be part of an overall abusive relationship. Tasha Wilson was sexually assaulted by an acquaintance on her college campus. She did not feel comfortable reporting the assault to campus administration because she'd heard about other students' negative experiences in doing so. Excuse me. It didn't feel like a welcoming and safe environment to disclose. I didn't know if there were even resources available. After noticing that Tasha seemed distant and anxious, her best friend and roommate at the time asked her about it, and Tasha told her what had happened. Tasha told her mom next. Although it was a difficult conversation to have, Tasha is glad that she told her mom. She had her love and support. The best way to support someone, says Tasha, is just to listen. Don't interrupt. Don't try to justify or relate. Don't tell us you know how we're feeling. Don't give advice on how we should cope with it. And don't be angry on my behalf, because I'm already angry enough. I've been surprised by how many other African American women I talk to have also been assaulted. But this isn't a group. This isn't an issue for one group or another. This is something we all need to discuss. Ethan Levine was sexually assaulted in high school by a friend of someone he was casually dating. After the assault, the person he was seeing became emotionally and sexually abusive to him. Years later, Ethan experienced 2 other instances of sexual assault in different contexts. In the immediate aftermath of the first assault, my focus was on whether it was real and whether I was right about what had happened. I got hung up on the fact that what happened to me didn't fit the definition of rape I'd grown up hearing. Unfortunately, Ethan also encountered some very hurtful responses as he told people about what had happened, especially as it related to his gender identity and expression. Ethan came out as a transgender man when he was 19. When he disclosed this, some people in his life told him that his identity was a result of having been sexually assaulted. Not only was this patently untrue, but it made Ethan feel invalidated both as a survivor and as a transgender man. When I speak authentically and truthfully about my experience, Ethan says, I have power. I am not going away. Marissa Hochstetler was repeatedly sexually assaulted by the OBGYN she saw during her pregnancy. the delivery of her twin daughters, and follow-up appointments. The perpetrator was well-regarded in his field and was recommended to Marissa by a friend. At the time of the incidents, Marissa trusted her doctor's treatment and was focused on making sure her pregnancy went well. With medical professionals, she says, there's often a legitimate reason why their hands are on your body. There's a gray area. The minute you step into their office, they have power over you. Looking back, there were a lot of things that felt odd. But I was pregnant and focused on my babies, and after all, this person was the uncle of a close friend of mine. Finally, during one visit after her twins were born, Marissa realized that the behavior crossed medical boundaries and knew immediately that something was wrong. It was still a few years until she disclosed the assault to her husband and to the district attorney's office, and she decided she was going to keep telling her story until she got justice. It's taken me some time to find my voice, she said, but now that I have, I'm not going to stop using it. There's no manual on how to do this stuff. I'm just doing it. I'm doing what's right by honoring my experience and speaking my truth. Abuse and assault harm us in so many ways, but I do want to, as I said, concentrate on the spiritual havoc it can wreak on the lives of those it affects. The spiritual harm can't be separated from the other types of harm that abuse and assault do: physical, cognitive, emotional, behavioral, social, sexual. But I have come to believe within us that there is a core of wholeness that will not be denied. Abuse and assault of any type is a full-on frontal attack on this core, and it can shatter it. But paradoxically, as indicated in a couple of our readings this morning, paradoxically, that core, that center, can remain whole and capable of guiding us toward healing and health. Even as we are shattered, we are indeed strong at the heart. Spirit or soul, I know it's a term that some of us probably have a little trouble with, but at least the way I use it, it's our inborn capacity for meaningfulness, for joy, for integrity, for connection with ourselves, with other people, with our world, and with whatever it is that we experience as the transcendent, and however we name that. It refers to the ways that we seek, find, and compose meaning for ourselves. It's how we develop a sense of whether the universe is a safe place to be. It's here that we know that our lives are significant, purposeful, worthwhile. Spirituality embraces our relationship with the entire vast web of being. It's a living sense of being a part of all that is, of being related across space and time, and perhaps to both living and non-living elements. Abuse and assault are, by their nature, very, very isolating, and tend to lead to overwhelming feelings of aloneness rather than relatedness. That life-giving sense of connection is lost. A full understanding of the harm that child abuse and sexual assault do must include understanding the harm done to the spirit of the survivor, whether they were a child or an adult at the time. Healing requires careful attention to the dimension of spirit, as well as to all the other dimensions that we've heard earlier. Humanistic psychologists John Furman and Ann Gieler refer to this type of wounding as the primal wound. I've used this quote in sermons before because I think they say it as well as any time I've ever heard it or seen it said. This wounding, they write, tears us apart from the intricate web of relationships in which we live, move, and have our being. A fundamental trust and connection to the universe is betrayed, and we become strangers to ourselves and others, struggling for survival in a seemingly alien world. In psychological terms, our connection to our deeper self is wounded. Lost my place. In religious and philosophical terms, it is our connection to ultimate reality, the ground of being or the divine, that is broken. However we describe it, whatever words we use to identify it, it cuts us off from the deepest roots of our existence. It severs our fundamental relationship with other people, the world, the ground of being. Healing our spirits after an event such as this grows naturally out of the other ways we heal, physically, emotionally, intellectually, socially. It's all connected. What affects one aspect of us affects all aspects of us, and we are hurt as whole persons, and we heal as whole persons. And spiritual healing can occur when we can start to restore those connections that have been torn apart. And there are just an almost endless list of ways that people go about finding this healing. But I think that being in community of some sort is essential. Speaking our truth and being heard deeply and compassionately is fundamental, whether that is to one other person or to a very small group of people or to a large community of people. It is in being heard as we tell our stories that our connections to others begin to be restored. It is in community that we begin to reclaim our membership in humanity again. I knew I had too much here, and in fact, I do. As we seek to find our own truth and community, I want to talk about the ways in which I see the kind of community that we strive to model and embody here, working. And certainly one of the ways is, and for me, just an integral, my becoming UU in many ways is a very direct outgrowth of my discovering that the old answers that religion posed not only failed to speak to what I needed, but were in themselves impediments to healing. As we seek to find our own truth and community, we can restore the web of relationships, which is vital. And I am convinced that the greatest potential for healing our spirits can be found in a community such as ours. We do not offer a ready-made theology, but tools and encouragement to build our own, and a supportive community in which to do so. Looking into the teachings of religions we're not familiar with, the many sources that we draw on can suggest alternative views of ultimate reality and all the things that go along with that, views that may fit better with who we are becoming. They may also suggest spiritual practices that we've not tried, that prove to be beneficial. We don't draw from one source, but many. And that can be very, very helpful. We encourage spiritual growth and change rather than saying, this is the way it was, this is the way it is, and this is supposed to be the way it is, we encourage the evolution of spirituality as our lives change. We provide a context in which our spirituality can grow with us. We also answer the devastation of abuse and assault with the affirmation that every person, right off the top, has an inherent worth and dignity. Child abuse and sexual assault of any type tell us that we have no worth, except for what some other person or people want to do to us or with us or whatever. In other words, except as objects to somebody else. Our affirmation of the dignity and value of every person, so important for survivors to hear, speaks a ringing no to this legacy of abuse. Our calls for justice speak directly to the problem that so few perpetrators are ever brought to trial, let alone are convicted. Too many stories are not told because too many survivors are fearful that there can be no justice. Survivors need to know that we're a community that consistently values justice. Child abuse, child sexual abuse, sexual violence of any sort rip asunder our life-giving connections with ourselves, other persons, the web of being, the transcendent itself. Our UU churches offer a community that models a free and responsible search for our own truth and meaning, a ringing affirmation of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, commitment to justice for those affected. Shalom. May it be so. We don't typically comment on the hymns before we sing them. I'm going to take the liberty of doing so this time because Fire of Commitment has become for me a kind of personal anthem. So that's why we're singing it this morning.